Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T and myself, Wole, and we are part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. The homie Ray G's out. What's going on, Will T?
I'm blessed to be here, man. I almost wasn't able to make it today, man.
Well, you good?
Yeah, man. Hemorrhoids, dog.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I ain't going to play. This real life stuff, man.
Yeah, man. Preparation H, baby. Only reason why I'm here.
Hey, yo, you a tough one, though. You a real soldier. The realest survived, man.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? The realest survived. But like I mentioned on our text chat, you know what I mean? Like, this is a darkness show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's how you bring it on the darkness,
that's
man.
That's what we do, bro. Like, we
make like it real look, dirty.
Real dirty. That's how we do it. Like, that's how we do it. It's a lot going on right now, man. But, yeah, man, what's going on? Like, did you watch the national championship game last? Oh, on Wednesday. Sorry, Monday.
My brother, I watched the first quarter.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? This ain't going to be close.
That was.
And I went to sleep.
That was.
I fell asleep. Uh-huh. And then I woke back up shortly once the third quarter start.
Yeah.
And I got a chance to see what I wanted to see, which was Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania trailer. It's the only reason why I watched the national championship, man.
Oh, was it good? It
was a new trailer.
Was it good?
Yeah. I mean, you have to put out there that you were at the game.
Yeah, I was at the game doing my work, you know, my due diligence. Shout out to the New Orleans Pelicans, man. I got to ask Coach Willie Green from New Orleans Pelicans a question because Najee Marshall, who played Eleanor Roosevelt, yep, from Greenbelt. So I had to ask the question about Najee, knowing it was a homecoming. And which was so dope, and it wasn't on the clips that I put out there, but as soon as he got into the presser, and be advised that C.J. McCollum dropped 34, Valanciunas dropped 27. As soon as he got into the presser, reporter asked them about, you know, like, why were they able to turn it around? Like, the first question, like, because of Najee Marshall.
If you followed that team, mm-hmm, then you know, despite Zion Williamson missing so many games, yeah, and despite Brandon Ingram missing so many games, those, think about it, man. Yeah. If any other team were missing those two guys, yeah, they would be sub 500.
Yeah.
If you think about the talent,
yeah,
that just that amount of talent, mm-hmm, but because of Najee Marshall, mm-hmm, and then Hubert Jones and Trey Murphy,
yeah,
like they, that's what you call excellent team building right there.
Yeah.
David Griffin has done an amazing job of collecting first round draft picks,
yep,
drafting smartly, then also using some of those that allotment of picks to trading for veterans,
mm-hmm,
and now you see where the New Orleans Pelicans are.
And great coaching.
Yeah, also.
For real. Like you said, like a lot of teams that would be missing Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram didn't play last night. I mean, on Monday. You mentioned Zion didn't play. They're missing those two players, and they're still able to stay afloat and win basketball games. It's a credit to, like you said, David Griffin and also like Willie Green as a coach. It's a credit to them because other organizations, other coaches, we've seen it. Like, as soon as they, one star is out, it's a wrap. Like, they're struggling. I mean, I'm a Lakers fan. Like,
yeah, Anthony Davis goes Anthony down. Davis goes down.
It's a problem. LeBron goes down. It's a problem. You
There's
know what
no
I mean?
Depth.
So,
let's be honest. Look at the team, our hometown team, right?
Yeah.
You
can make the argument that they're the same with the dude.
I mean,
you can make that argument.
I'm just saying, like, Brett, you know that. You know, think about, and not to bash these first round picks and these first round selections, right?
Yeah.
But
no, I get your point. Yeah.
You aren't getting the production you thought you would get from drafting guys that high,
yeah,
like Corey Kispert,
yeah,
drafting a guy like Rui.
Rui Hachimura,
drafting a guy like Denny. And drafting a guy, this guy should be on the back of a milk carton, Johnny Davis.
Oh, my God, that's ridiculous that he's not playing. I'm sorry. Like, that's just not.
It's not acceptable.
You're not even a great team right now. Why are you not playing him? He has to learn.
Like, yeah, really, he has to get place. He has to get some burn somehow,
yeah,
man. And for you to, for you to think that, you know, we are in the midst, that you're in the midst of competing, right? Mm-hmm. And not take the long-term view that, hey, I got to develop this young fella. I have to see what he could do to help us out.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. I'm dead serious. It's ridiculous, though. But Amp Power Media, I mentioned Amp Power Media. Amp Power Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page.
I love it. I love the energy, bro. I love it. Hey, check out our weekly NFL picks. But now we're in the playoffs. I think we do playoff picks too. Our playoff picks on the Football Garbage Time website. Just go to www.footballgarbagetime.com. It's part of the Urban Sports Scene Football Garbage Time Challenge. I will say that I won the fantasy football. It is official. I did win the fantasy football portion of it. So we do have a champion on
that's
the
what's up, man.
I think Haku Wong won the
picks. I mean, I didn't compete.
I know, like Ray tweeted, like, didn't a bunch of folks like skip on, like, miss a week? I feel like a bunch of folks missed a week.
I missed more than a week. I know. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
Let's get into our tradition.
The pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Washington Commanders beating the Dallas Cowboys in their last game of the season and the Commanders firing offensive coordinator Scott Turner.
Hashtag fire Scott Turner.
Hashtag fire Scott Turner. Now it's hashtag buy Scott Turner. At 8:20. At 8:20, actually, in the world of boxing, we'll talk about Javante Tank Davis, TK Owen, Hector Garcia, and reports that there is a Errol Spence Jr. and Keith Thurman deal being finalized for a fight in April. Finally, as part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with University of Maryland Eastern Shore men's basketball coach Jason Crafton.
All right. In the final game of the season, the Washington Commanders defeated the Dallas Cowboys 26-6. Rookie quarterback Sam Howell got the start, threw a touchdown on his first pass. Uh-huh. All right, Wole, what were your thoughts?
Wale, you know me as Wale. It's all good.
Yeah, man. You want to be known as – you went to your parents' motherland, not your motherland.
That was my motherland. I was there.
No, your parents' motherland. No. You're an American citizen, bro.
We're not going there, bro. We're not going to do that. We can do that later, though. We can't do that later. I do want to get back to that, though. Behold! All right, we're good now. I got it out of my system. I had to get it out of my system. All right, for me, it was something that I've been asking for, clamoring for since, like, the bye week. Because at the end of the day, what do you play sports for? You play sports to win a championship. Supposed to. Like, if you're not aiming to do something to win a championship, then what are we here for, right? Good.
Okay, but I'll stop you on that point. If you're Ron Rivera, and you got a chance to see Sam Howell, up until, you know, you've drafted him, you've got a chance to see him up until that point, as you said, during the bye week.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought with this defense and a run game that if I put in
those guys,
the other guys, Wentz and Heinicke,
okay,
maybe I do have a chance to at least get into the playoffs and give myself a chance to compete for the championship.
Maybe I would say that I get that, but that's if they're playing good basketball, but good football as quarterbacks. To be honest, like top of the line, like again, Pro Football Focus rated Heinicke. Just Heinicke. I know we can talk about Carson too, because Carson's been trash. But Heinicke, your starter, the guy that everybody wanted, 32 out of 32 quarterbacks. It's not like this quarterback, his play, is that much different from a rookie quarterback.
But he gave you an opportunity. I mean, you went on
despite the quarterback.
Okay.
A lot of, yeah.
But he gave you an opportunity to win, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look at, now, this isn't apples to apples comparison, but look at Brock Purdy. Right?
Yeah.
You know, Brock Purdy, he's played good.
Yeah.
Has he played lights out?
No.
But he's given that team a great chance to win because, one, outstanding coaching. Yeah,
good running game.
Good running game, defense.
I totally
agree. I mean, so you have two. You had two of those three elements. You had a good running game and you had a defense.
Yeah, I again agree. But Heineke, Brock Purdy, and even those games, like, again, they say despite, but those games, he was efficient. He was efficient, not turning the football over. He was efficient. This quarterback's turned the football over. Hasn't been as efficient. Again, he throws over 150 yards. There are a lot of things that, average-wise, hasn't even scored 30. Brock Purdy's had a 30-point game. This dude hasn't even scored 30. Barely scored 20. All I'm saying is that if you're at that point where your offense is already stagnant, one of the, like, not good on third-down conversions, all of this, why not play the young dude? And you saw, again, I'm not saying the young dude was perfect against the Cowboys, but the young dude was adequate, made plays with his feet. He did everything that you wanted both quarterbacks to do. Showed you that he can throw the deep ball accurately. He showed you that. Mobile in the pocket. So he did something that you would want Carson Wentz and Taylor Heineke to do. You know what I mean? So it's just like, to me, as even as a rookie, he did so many other things. And then I know that you went out of that from both of your quarterbacks. And I know, like, we're going to say, well, Ron Rivera seen this quarterback. Can you say you can trust Ron Rivera? Like, he seen Carson Wentz, and he went back to Carson Wentz.
I got a theory.
Go ahead, bro.
You started the hashtag.
Yeah.
Hashtag fire Scott Turner.
I did that for a minute. You know it.
I have a theory.
Go ahead, bro.
What if Ron Rivera thought that, okay, I see the way that this guy's calling the game.
Yeah.
The way he's calling the game would potentially put Sam Howell in trouble from a confidence standpoint or from a physical point on the field. What if he thought that and what if he thought that, you know, the way that he's taught him isn't the best way that you coach up a quarterback? I'm just throwing out some food for thought. Ultimately thought that Sam Howell is a viable starting option, but he just didn't think that with that offensive coordinator, it will put him in the best position.
I think that's a very good question. I mean, I just don't think it's wrong. I mean, no disrespect, you know, to Coach Rivera. I'm gonna give respect. I'm gonna say Coach Rivera. I don't think he's smart enough to think of it that way.
Okay,
but I will say though, if he did, that's genius. Because I that is a fear of mine when it comes to bad offensive coordinators. Like, they can ruin young quarterbacks who have talent. I agree. I'm not going to – that is a thing.
Like, I don't know if it's the case, but let's look in New York. Let's look at the Jets. Mike LaFleur was fired today. And if you kind of read in between the lines –
Oh, because it was such a race.
Yeah, if you read in between the lines, Robert Saleh, some of his comments, he's kind of alluded to – he doesn't think that the offensive coordinator put that quarterback in the best position. Well, he said, I'm not going to just say the offensive coordinator. He doesn't think as a staff they put that young quarterback in the best position to be successful.
I think his situation is totally different. But yeah, I would say it because that dude is reckless. Like, he is Taylor Heineke with an arm. Like, that dude reckless. Nah, he reckless. That dude reckless. Like, and I would already make the argument again. Like, I wasn't a big fan of him coming out of college. Because just like people have issues with other quarterbacks, like you're a BYU, like you're not seeing anybody. And then the chances, if you really looked at his stats when he did get to see somebody, it wasn't impressive. I mean, the somebodies that you would deem like decent power five schools, like decent, he wasn't putting up numbers. He put up numbers in his conference. That's what he did. I mean, he's got an arm, got a rocking arm. He does. That's physically there. Like that's obvious to see. But in terms of playing quarterback in the NFL, to be a day one starter was kind of iffy to me. Like, he wasn't that dude. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't that dude. But, yeah. But I would see, like, again, like, this situation, this is something that had to happen, man. Like, and we can get into it. But actually, let me ask this question on social media. I mean, ask you this question real quick, Wilsie, before we go to the next one. Did Sam Howell show you that he could be the starter next year? Or was it still, like, incomplete to you?
It's incomplete to me. One game, right? One game against your rivals. Your rivals weren't necessarily engaged. They weren't engaged.
Like, real talk, they were, I mean, dog,
it,
they
it was
engaged.
A lifeless performance.
It was just a bad performance. And they got
it was
beat.
Lifeless performance.
Dude, Waller. Every game, no, be real with you. Like, I'm not even, I was in, like, you could see it. When you look, you play sports, when you see somebody's facial expressions, you can see that, like, pissed off at itself. Like, you could literally, it wasn't like, you know, a lifeless performance, like, yeah, I don't care. Like, okay. Them players care. Mike McCarthy cared too.
It's fair to say some players care.
I guess fair. Yeah,
but I think an overwhelming majority of the Cowboys roster that stepped foot on the field Sunday down the street from this state, from this in that stadium, down the street from the studio,
yes,
did not care.
I would say, would you say that the star players cared? Because you lost CeeDee. All the best players to me cared. CeeDee Lamb cared because you could see him frustrated. Dak cared because you could see like he had that Dave Chappelle Dylon joint. He had that face. Like he was just like he cared. I could tell he cared. And because anytime you don't play well, like because at the end of the day, like you can see, like the Eagles weren't. No one was worried, but the Eagles weren't blowing that. They were looking at the scoreboard. The Eagles weren't blowing them out. That game was close.
Yes,
like they,
yeah, yes,
they
it was
played
close.
Like. There's a reason why the starters were out there. Like to me, if you're a coach, this is to keep it a buck. If you play with that type of energy, like you're referring to, like you're not caring. You're not playing the whole game. I don't care if you. I don't care whatever because somebody can get hurt. Like you're not playing like that. You know what I'm saying? But to your point though, it was incomplete. I want to get into the Cowboys game because that game already. But go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
I'm just saying. To me, at a certain point, at certain points of the game, it didn't seem as if. They were playing with a lot of
I can see that, Doug. There's
energy behind them.
There's a complacency when you're already in the postseason, yes. Though. Just true. Go ahead. Mm.
All right. Okay. But yesterday,
go ahead, bro.
The news came down.
Let's get right to this, baby.
That the Commanders.
That's the most important thing anyway.
Why did you? I'm not gonna use the word that you said. Finally, I'm not gonna use that.
Oh,
word.
So my bad. Yeah, I did it out loud. I said finally let go.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So yesterday, the Commanders.
I didn't say fired. I said finally let go.
Yesterday, the Commanders let go of offensive coordinator Scott Turner.
Yes.
How are you feeling about them replacing him?
It ain't better than having sex, but it damn feels good. You know, it feels good. Like, I will say it feels good. You know what I mean? Like for me. I just think that this is the thing that needed to happen. Oh, my man, Eric, what's going on, Eric? He said, have you met Wentz? He never cared. Oh, he said, have you met Wentz? Carson Wentz never cared on the field. I think he cared. I think he's different. He's a different dude.
Yeah, I think he's a different guy. His first two stops, Philadelphia and Indianapolis, it didn't work out. There were some rumors that it was – you know, he didn't necessarily connect well with his teammates.
Yeah.
I don't know what, you know, if we look at the performance on the field, it looked as if the guys responded
better
to Taylor Heinicke.
It seemed that way.
And I don't know what the disconnect is, but Carson Wentz is a guy who has immense physical tools and, you know, maybe Washington decides to cut him and bring him back. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. They're gonna come. I don't think they're bringing him back, but yeah.
But this is what you are deeply passionate about,
exactly.
Man.
So also, my man Eric said, "How QB1 time to stop screwing around with choices and make a decision." But I want to go talk about this coordinator. This is something that needed to be done. We see in the world of life this thing called nepotism, and some people are just given jobs who don't deserve it. When a guy was a quarterback coach, didn't show you anything in Carolina when he got an opportunity to be the coordinator in that sample size last four games, he didn't really show you anything either. Then he comes over here. There was a guy here named Kevin O'Connell who was showing you progress with God rest in peace with Dwayne Haskins. His last game with Kevin O'Connell probably had his best game. Then he got hurt and had to sit it out. But he was super accurate. It was probably his best game of his honest to me his best game of his career. To be honest with you. But then you met with Kevin O'Connell. You interviewed him. He interviewed for the job. But reports are that you already made your decision that you were going to keep Scott Turner over at Kevin O'Connell, guy that showed you more. That probably showed you more in those sample sizes compared to Scott Turner, also who's actually on a decent, really good tree. You know what I mean? A good offensive tree. But you went with Kevin O'Connell. I mean Scott Turner. Excuse me. And look now. Look where we are now. You gave him an extension last year, too, and everything. But look where we are now. The fan base told you this already. They told you that this dude wasn't the one. And now he is gone. I am happy. I am sorry. I don't like people losing their jobs, but I'm happy. Like, this is what I said on Twitter. God bless you. In peace. Hashtag by Scott Turner. But I did add this, though. I can see you down the road being a quarterback coach and maybe a high school football coach, maybe a college football coach. But, and you got to work. Like, you got to work to get this. Like, I'm serious. Like, there's dudes out there that we've seen that haven't gotten this opportunity to be offensive coordinator. They had, you know what I mean, they haven't gotten this opportunity. The stuff, because he's North Turner's son, because Coach Rivera has a great relationship with North Turner, because North Turner gave him an opportunity, like gave Coach Rivera an opportunity in San Diego when it was the San Diego Chargers. This is the reason why Scott Turner is the OC. Because you got to show something to be the OC. You got to show something. It's either you're on a vicious tree or you got to show something. And he didn't show you anything. The first two seasons, for real, didn't really show you anything. But then you gave him more talent. Said, okay, it's a quarterback. We're going to try to work it out. It's a quarterback. And you saw the same thing. So all I'm saying is, nepotism, this is a lesson for you people out there in the world of nepotism, right? It just doesn't work, all right? It doesn't work.
That's not always
the case. Not always the case. You're right. I'm sorry. Not always the case. Let me take that back. I'll take that back. Let me retract my statement. When they don't show you anything, you don't have to stick with it. Is that better? Like, there's a ways you can easily take yourself out of it. You're not going to burn any bridges, okay? Let's be fair. He didn't do his job. He was horrible at it. Let's move on. Scott Turner, I wish you the best. Hope you're a great quarterback coach. If you want to do high school football, college football, I think there's a place for you there. I really do. Because then you can build your resume, and maybe you can be that guy. But you can't just jump in the NFL because you're somebody's son. You're like your daddy won Super Bowls. No. It don't work that way. You got to work.
You sound like a real
jerk. Asshole.
Yes. Asshole.
Yes. Yes. I'm going for all that.
Sound like Thank a real you. Asshole. Thank I'm you. Just going to be honest with you. Yeah. All right. So let me ask you this. Who's the head coach?
Coach Ron Rivera.
Do you think the head coach had some input or has input into the style of offense that is drawn up? So let me ask you
I'm
this.
I'm gonna tell you.
Let me ask you this question. Then I'll. So you think that it was a Joe Gibbs and Richie Pettibone situation where Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio focused on the defense, and he said, "Hey, Scott Turner, you take the offense. That's all yours."
I'm gonna go even deeper than that. This is what he did, because I can tell what he did. He did the same thing with Del Rio. Del Rio has total autonomy of what he wants to do till a certain point. So Ron will get you to a certain point. He won't. He doesn't. He's not a. He won't meddle. So when they were losing games, you could see that. You see the change of philosophy. It's every time. It happens all the time for this team. It's change of philosophy once they start losing. So Ron said, "You know what? I want to run the football." So he stops him. If it was Ron Rivera, like look at facial expressions. For instance, I'll mention the Cleveland game. If you watch the Cleveland game, it's 4th and 1. He runs 4th and 1. He runs the third string running back on a pitch play. Look at Ron Rivera's reaction, and you tell me, is he involved in play calling whatsoever? Because Brian Robinson Jr. just gave you like 4 yards prior. He has full autonomy to how the style he wants to play to a certain extent.
That's fair, but let me counter that.
Yeah.
In my regular 9-to-5, yeah. I'm a supervisor, yeah. Right? I have a team, people on my team. I allow people to sometimes, I give them the autonomy to make certain decisions, yeah, and to execute on certain things, yeah, right? But once I hear that's a bad idea, I'm just, my thing is no.
Yeah.
And then I start to rein things in.
Yeah.
So do you think it's a fault in the coaching of head coach Ron Rivera that when you saw Cleveland 4th and 1, he, yeah, runs that pitch.
Yeah.
He has a headset on.
I think it's his fault. That,
do you think he should have called a timeout, right, and said, what the
that's
F are you doing?
That's a, yes, he's, look, you're a head coach. No, I know where you're coming from. You're the head coach. It's your fault. Mm-hmm. You have control.
Yes.
Like, if you see something stupid, you stop it. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're both at fault. But I'm saying, like, for you to even, like, I guess to me, as a play caller, for you to even think that play made sense is ridiculous to me. You know what I mean? Like, you play a video game, bro. If I play a video game.
Well, okay. I'll give you
the third string. All right, so you got, think about
the third string.
The third string, bro. Like, think about this. You got you have and this is because he's a poor man's version. So this is it. If you have King Henry, mm-hmm. right? Fourth and one, and you're going to run the ball, right? Like you're going to run with the running back. Are you running the ball with King Henry or his backup or his third string backup? Let's keep it a buck.
You going to run with King Henry?
Yes. So in anything, it's in the simplistic form of calling plays. If you fail with running the ball with King Henry, you're going to be like, what? Man, I failed my top gun.
Right.
So nobody going to be negative. I failed my top gun. But you running with a third stringer?
Okay, maybe. And I don't like to use the word devil's advocate, but yeah. I'm just giving you a contrarian perspective, right? Mm-hmm. What if he thought, okay, I will catch them off guard with putting the third string running back in and throwing this toss?
You know what? Maybe. But then you run it to the best player on defense, Myles Garrett. You run it on Myles Garrett's side. Like, it all doesn't make sense. Like, it all doesn't make sense. With a weak offensive line. It ain't like this offensive line is blowing folks over. To one of the best players on defense in the whole NFL.
Okay. All right. Well, let's wrap up the Scott Turner talk. Yes, yes, and let's talk about the future.
Yes.
Right? Because there's an opening here as offense coordinator on the Washington Commanders. Who would you like to see step into that spot? If Ron Rivera
was calling me,
if was calling you, you and my guy Al were at the press conference.
Oh yeah,
and Coach Rivera were up there, yeah. And you and Al says we need to hire.
Oh, like back in the day, yeah.
Yes, we need to hire X.
Frank Wright.
Okay,
Frank Wright. I think it's perfect because Frank Wright. I mean, he was on the staff that won the bowl.
Philadelphia.
The Andy Reid tree is a dominant tree. It's one of the best trees. I mean, people talk about the Shanahan tree, but the Andy Reid tree is real. Some people have failed, but they've had some success too. After they had some success, then failed. Like the dude, Matt Nagy, mm-hmm. in Chicago, he got him to the postseason, and he kind of like tailed off a little bit. But Frank Wright to me is a good offensive mind. He did well with Carson Wentz and with the Colts. I don't want Carson Wentz. I'm just saying he did well with Carson Wentz with the Colts. Phillip Rivers was decent. I mean, I love Phillip Rivers, but he helped get that team to the postseason with the aging Phillip Rivers when people thought that Phillip was kind of over the hill. You bring him here, he's an innovative mind. He has Maryland ties because he went to the University of Maryland, played mm-hmm. on that football team. And then Ron Rivera is super cool with Andy Reid. That's another connection.
He coached?
He coached. I think, what's Ron Rivera coach? Was he with them? I can't.
I'm not 100%
sure. I'm not
sure, yeah.
But I know he's cool with Andy Reid. Like, I know they have a great relationship. Frank Wright, you know, obviously, Frank Wright is under the Andy Reid tree. So I think it's a good fit.
I like that suggestion. I don't necessarily have a...
I have people out. Some folks have had, like, I think George. We got to leave the segment soon anyway. But
I'm not necessarily. Yeah, he did coach under Andy Reid from 99 to 2003 as a linebacker.
I think it's a good fit. I think it's a decent fit. I do. I think it's a real decent fit.
But I think history has shown that Ron Rivera is going to bring in someone from Carolina that he's close with.
Think about Shula. I know. I think he may go after Shula.
He might.
And he's a Buffalo right now. I think he would do that. I think it's just a mistake, but I think he would do that.
That's what history has.
No, it's real talk. I mean, that's history has shown. Like, yeah, that's real talk. It definitely has shown that that's his move. That's his play. He likes to do that. He likes Carolina dudes, and he won't stop. Like, bad boy, can't stop, won't stop. And I'm like, bro, stop. Like, please stop. Like, and my thing about him, he doesn't even get the best players the best people out of Carolina. It's like he gets the worst ones. Like, he got Taylor Heineke and Kyle
Allen.
He gets
who he feels comfortable with, man.
And Kyle Allen. Here we go. Like, I was like, and I know I used to complain about, like, how you not get the dude that helped you win games, though? Like, you didn't get Cam. Like, you didn't get the one that, the best
that,
one.
I mean, that will forever be the mystery.
Yeah, for real. Real talk.
I mean, you know, media and fans. Yeah. You know, why didn't you at least
get the best one out of the Carolina crew? Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you got all the not the best one. Interesting. All right, man. Let's skip the break. Let's go right into the next topic. All right, we're gonna talk boxing. So Saturday night at the Capital One Arena, it was jumping. for many reasons. Javante Tank Davis TKO'd Hector Luis Garcia with the left hand in the closing moments of round eight, retaining his WBA regular lightweight belt. How did Tank look to you, Wilty?
He looked like a man who put everything else to the side that he's been going through and focused on boxing, right, with his performance. When he hit Garcia with that left,
like on the tunnel, like right here.
Yeah,
the bridge.
It was flush.
It was.
It was flush. Yeah. It was one of those moments where if you had the opportunity to watch the fight there, you were like, damn. You know it was out. You know it was lights out. Yeah. You know it was lights out.
I thought he was gonna be knocked out earlier. Like, them punches is real. Garcia got a chin. I'm gonna give that to. He got a chin.
You know who was notably absent from the, I guess, pre-fight promotion stuff like Floyd Mayweather.
But he's about to leave him though, right? That's the word.
Yeah, I guess that's the word. It strikes me as, you know, a little bit awkward.
Yeah, I thought he looked good. I was like, get him out of there. I mean, this fight wasn't like the fight for me, because I just thought that Tank was, it was never really in doubt. I just thought that Tank's skill set would get this dude out of here anyway. No knock on Hector Garcia. I just didn't think it was going to be a competitive fight. I knew it was going to happen eventually. I was glad he got, I knew eventually he was going to get him out of there. It wasn't a fight that I felt like was going to test, because, I mean, it's Capital One anyway. It's Capital One Arena anyway. So I didn't think it was the fight that was going to test Tank and put him in the waters. But I will say this, though. He is a star. He's a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, look.
He is a superstar. Like, who he brings to the table, like, who he gets to watch him fight, he is, like,
think about it, right? Mm-hmm. He, for the most part, he starts fighting on the West Coast. Starts his career fighting on the West Coast, right? He starts to build a fan base, a loyal fan base of people who come to either California or Vegas to watch him fight. Mm-hmm. Then he goes to New York, to the Barclays.
Yep.
Everyone goes to the Barclays to watch him. He goes to Atlanta for a fight. Mm-hmm. Atlanta, that fight was jumping. And then coming to D.C. I mean, if you had the opportunity to actually attend the fight Saturday, you saw just the star power that this young man has, right? You know, like, even though, you know, Baltimore is about 40 minute drive from D.C. He was able to pack the Capital One Arena, right? Yeah. It was packed, and it was packed with
it's all love too.
Yeah, it was all love.
To a certain extent.
Yeah, for the most part. It's just I hate to see guys like him. This is the one knock that I have. Like, guys like him, they're clearly generational talents, right?
Yes.
So in my mind, I want to see these generational talents fight other great fighters building up their legacy, right? And I understand that there's certain politics, right? You have to fight your mandatory, and you also, because you are aligned with a certain promoter.
Yeah, PBC and stuff like that.
Some promoters are just simply like, I'm not trying to make another promoter rich.
This is crazy, which is going to
ultimately be the downfall of
boxing. Period. Yeah.
But one thing I do want to bring up, though.
Go ahead, bro.
One thing that I didn't like, I don't know if you noticed. The majority of people, they typically get their news on sports from one source, ESPN. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Throughout ESPN's coverage of the Tank Davis fight, there was always one thing they brought up, right? His incident with his child's mother.
Yeah, the thing that
had been going on prior to the fight.
Yeah.
You know, whatever article, just about whatever article or whatever pundit that you heard talking about boxing from a certain, talking about this fight, right? I'm not going to say the Tim Bradleys or the Andre Ward.
Is it somebody else?
Guys like that. But in writing, right?
Okay.
Someone, you know, bringing up.
A boxing writer bringing up that
situation in regards to relation to him in this fight. But it's just interesting how.
You want Mike Coppinger?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you said
It's interesting how Mike Coppinger would write every piece that he wrote about this fight.
And mention that.
It mentioned that. But one of the leading content creators for that network, Dana White,
got into a slapping bout
with his wife on New Year's.
And actually, and you've seen it, and actually happened.
And there's video of it.
And actually, and the chick, that, I mean, at least Tanks said it never happened.
Yes.
She came out and said it never happened.
Yes. And but we saw this with our eyes.
We saw
eyes,
this
right?
one with our eyes, though.
Just to you know, just like we saw the Ray Rice.
Yes.
With our own eyes.
And this is killing me. Like,
and it's just not. And it's and me, ESPN has really buried it. Right?
Yes.
They haven't mentioned
agree,
it
bro.
At all.
I agree, man.
Right. Now, I know that they've mentioned it to some extent when they've kind of thrown him those fluff. I think there was an interview with, I forgot who it was. I want to say I forgot exactly who it was. Mm-hmm. But he talked about it.
I'm having an issue with his that whole thing, though.
I just have an issue with the bias, right? Because, you know, there's a PBC boxer, a boxer who doesn't fight on ESPN, and then they bring it up all the time. Even though, you know,
I never thought of UFC. I guess UFC is when ESPN. I don't really like
UFC is exclusively on ESPN.
Yeah, I don't watch UFC. That's why. But
I'm just saying, like, I'm reading. You know, because I'm trying to learn more about just combat sports, like MMA also.
No, it makes sense.
Right? So I'm trying to read up on that. And I'm not going to say the only good source, but one of the main sources is ESPN,
right?
Yes,
it is.
So as I'm reading, you know, about this upcoming fight for Tank, and I'm also reading on ESPN about, and I'm just looking at the coverage, and I'm blown away at the bias.
You know what? The issue with me and, you know, about it, period, is like I'm not paying just like, but I just think that dude ain't getting enough. I compare it to everything, all athletes. Like, that's what's bothering me. Like, all athletes. Anybody puts you see these videos of they putting them hands on their girlfriends, whatever,
mm-hmm.
they're ostracized. It is over.
It's cancel culture. They're canceled.
When is it going to happen for him? Like, I don't hear anything, man.
I don't.
And,
right?
Like, and I think TBS. Was it TBS? It's on TBS, the slap show.
Yeah, he's about to come out with a slap
joint. That joint got pushed back a week, and that's it. Like, it should be canceled.
Yeah, you would think so.
It's crazy. I'm serious. Like, all of it. Like, that's what bothers me. Like, this dude is getting, like, he's getting off, and I'm like, we seen it.
Yeah, we saw it.
We
TMZ,
seen it.
Right? We saw it with TMZ. I guess that's the one thing that frustrates me / that, you know, annoys me, right? Is the bias, right? You have a guy, Tank Davis, who's had his run-ins with the law, who's run afoul of the law.
He's young.
I hate to use that excuse.
I know, but I know what you're saying. But
he's run afoul of the law.
I just hope you mature. Like, when I'm saying that, like, I hope you mature.
Right. So every article that you write about him brings up that, you know, the instance with his girlfriend or his child's mother. I don't know if they're still together, so I want to be respectful to
child's
that.
Child's mother is a safe way to say it right
now. And then also other times he's run afoul of the law. But then you have Dana White, a guy who's one of your biggest partners from a content perspective. UFC is always on ESPN Friday night, Saturday nights, or ESPN pay-per-view, ESPN Plus with their big cards.
Yeah.
And you don't even mention anything.
It's crazy. No, I'm with you. I think
you don't mention anything. You don't suspend him or anything.
That's what bothers me, man.
It's just crazy to me.
It's annoying, man. It really is, though, but I just hope, like, you know, for Tank, it's come out in terms of, like, his girl said he ain't touch her. So that's what we all got to go off right now. So that's how I look at it. And so if she said he ain't touch her, then folks need to apologize.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
folks need to apologize to him, though, because he was getting dragged. He was getting dragged.
And yeah, like you said, I'm not going to pretend to say I know what happened.
I don't know what happened. I'm just saying, like, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I don't want to, like, to me, if somebody tells me something, I'm going to believe it. Until I know otherwise. Just the same way that when something comes out, reports come out, we all can only go off of what we think, you know, what's been said. Like, okay, he did it. But when somebody comes out and says, all right, I mean, if you do your investigating, whatever, you can come up with your own opinion. But if somebody comes out and says, like, the person that it happened to comes out and says, he ain't touched me, I was just doing whatever, then I'm gonna go off what you told me. You know what I mean? Because it happened to you. Now, if something may have changed your mind, then that's on you. But, like, it happened to you.
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know what I'm saying? So, we can only go for that. But going to Tank, so for after its performance, you know, Jim Gray did ask Tank about Ryan Garcia. Like, is it going to happen? Your opinion, Will T. You was talking about it earlier. Like, yo, you want to see two – he's just a generational talent. You want to see him play against somebody else who's deemed, you know – just as talented in a Ryan Garcia. Like, do you think this fight will go down?
Yeah, I mean, from everything we've heard thus far.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think Ryan Garcia has delayed taking any fight until...
No, he hasn't.
Huh?
He hasn't. He hasn't delayed anything.
Because at one point there was talk of Ryan Garcia fighting, but he pushed that off and he said he's going to wait until... Fighting Tank, okay. Tank Davis, mm-hmm. is my understanding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do think we'll see it, and this will probably be the first of probably two
mega fights
that we see this year. The other one being Usyk versus Fury.
Okay, all right, got you. Yeah. I thought you were going some other direction. Yeah, I got you. Yeah, definitely. That one's been more, which I give props to heavyweight fighters, though. Props to heavyweight fighters because they ain't scared to smoke. They let it happen. They make it happen. They find a way to make it happen for heavyweight fighters. So I get them props. I'm with you. I give props to Ryan Garcia. Actually, props to Ryan Garcia. Props to Tank if it does happen. Also, you know, Shakur Stevenson, Devin Haney. Because I feel like them dudes, they want to make a great fight. Like they want to fight the next person. There's real, you can see it. It's not like just talk. It's not internet smoke. They want it to happen. But for this fight, yeah, I hope it happens, man, because I think it's intriguing. I guess you got two different type of stars, right? To me, you got Tank, who's a superstar, and then you got Ryan Garcia, who has an awesome following, right? You know, awesome following. I can't say that he's – my idea is that he brings a nice draw to a venue, and he does. But I don't know, like, does he bring, like, the type of celebrity like Tank is doing right now. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'll say this. Tank Davis is huge within the urban African-American black demographic, right? Ryan Garcia, if you, and I don't know how many of those followers on Instagram are bots or anything like that, sure, right? But he's a guy.
He got a lot of followers.
Yeah, he has a guy who has followers, you know, 6 million plus followers on Instagram. And we know that now having a following on that platform is a way for you to monetize, right? Yep. Especially if they're passionate boxing fans, which I'm pretty sure all 6 million aren't.
Yeah.
But that will at least translate into a casual fan or a person who isn't a following of boxing, hearing about this fight and possibly gaining interest in paying for the fight or attending the fight.
No, I agree. I do agree. So I do. I think I just want it to happen, man. I really do. But you know, speaking of a fight that's going to happen, that could have happened years ago when this dude was on top. You know, Keith Thurman, when he was on top, with one time, Keith Thurman. You know what I mean? But Earl, there are reports out there that Earl and Keith Thurman are finalizing a deal for an April fight. This fight would be at junior middleweight, which is
it
would be 154, right?
It won't be contested at welterweight. I don't know if it's going to be at 154. I don't know if it's a catchweight.
Okay.
So I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I read something. There's reports. I think I read something they would do it at junior middleweight 154, but who knows? But your thoughts that this fight could happen?
It's a fight that should have happened years ago.
Years ago.
to be honest with you, I'm not too excited because at this point Keith Thurman hasn't had the level of activity against the quality of opponents that would have gotten you excited about this. Let's say three or 4 years ago, prior to Keith Thurman's elbow injury and prior to his loss to Manny Pacquiao.
Yes.
Right. But nevertheless, it's still a fight that it's another name.
Yes.
A quality name for Errol Spence. Right. And if Errol Spence is kind of has his mind set on just continue to take on challenger, the next challenger in front of him, instead of giving the public what they want with a fight with Terrence Bud Crawford, then this is a quality opponent.
What I like about Earl, I mean, people can say whatever about who's at fault, because I'm not gonna get into who's at fault. I have my own beliefs, but I'm not gonna get into all that because mm-hmm. It's like a Biggie Pac thing. You can go either which way with it for a lot of folks. But I like his so-called tune-up fights are these kind of fights. You know what I mean? Like his tune-up fights are, like you mentioned, are name fighters that everybody knows about. That not always. Go ahead. I want you.
I just wanted to put one caveat. His fights are against PBC boxers.
Yes, they're all against PBC boxers, but they're like.
They have a name.
They have a name, man. Like, have a name. And if you've watched, and anybody, I mean, you've watched, Will. Like, I thought, for me, you're right. The caliber of competition that Keith Thurman he hasn't fought anybody like this. But his last fight I saw him fight, he looked good. He looked good. For a guy that took a big layoff, he looked good. You know what I mean? He's going to need to be more active, I agree. You know what I mean? But I just like that when ain't it a PBC boxer, I totally agree. But the caliber of opponents that he gets, he sees in these when we're still aiming to see a Bud Crawford. It's not like, okay, I may fight this one dude real quick, and then I'm gonna see Bud, right? Or then mm-hmm. I'm gonna go try to negotiate with Bud. It's like I'm gonna fight a dude that is a threat to a lot of people. That is a real opposing threat. Like when you think of Keith Thurman, like you're right, we all think that Earl's gonna beat Keith Thurman. Like I'm not saying he's gonna lose to Keith Thurman, but there is an element, right? Of that, if you get one time, that like the one time that we saw in the past, like with that power, like your mindset's gonna be like, there is an opportunity, there's a chance. Like even for instance, like even which I give, you know, even though it's a different version, like when Bud fought Kell Brook, mm-hmm. it's like there is an element like, okay, maybe we can get that old Kell Brook back, then this fight could be a certain fight, right? So there is that element like when one time fighting Earl is like. There is that element in your back of your mind, like, can you get that one time, one more time, like, just to bring it, could this be that type of fight? So I do respect Earl for, like, taking on a fighter like Keith Thurman. Because you can go a different route. You can still, even in PBC, you can go a different route.
Yeah, but the fact that this fight isn't being held at 147 to me, it takes a little bit of the luster off. Because I'm just not sure. Because these are both guys who, at 147, are very powerful punchers. Uh-huh. I don't know if that power translate, if they're going to fight at 154 or if it translate at a catchweight.
Yeah.
So just interested to, you know, that dynamic right there kind of throws me off a little bit about the level of excitement for this fight. Nevertheless, these are two quality boxers that hopefully we get to fight in April.
But like you said, I mean, we all care about the fight. We all care about one particular fight. We care about Spence versus Bud. That's what we care about. That's just, it is what it is. So what does this, in your opinion, what does this fight mean for that particular fight?
Just boils the pot a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It gives, unfortunate, I'm not going to say unfortunately, it tilts the balance of power, negotiating power a little bit, right? Even more for Errol Spence, gotcha. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what's true or not with regards to their negotiations. Right, yeah. So I'm not going to speculate. Yeah. But clearly, there's been a breakdown of communication on the split of the purse and guarantees.
Yeah, but yeah.
So
with Al Heyman, suppose that's what Bud's with Al Heyman.
Well, no, I mean Al Heyman is the advisor / promoter of the fight. I'm sure Al Heyman has been doing this for many of years, and these guys want a certain figure.
Yes,
and he probably thinks, hell no, because I won't get my return on investment for that figure, right? Mm-hmm. So ultimately, this probably tilts the balance a little bit more towards Errol Spence when they come to the table to negotiate in that pot of money. Uh-huh. Whether it's 60-40, 70-30, I don't know if it's 50-50 or 55 or 55-45 or winner take
all.
I'm not gonna say winner take all, but winner take
most of the purse.
60, loser takes 40.
Yeah.
So you know, it's
tough, man. I agree with you. I agree with you. It does hinder the negotiation. If Earl looks good against Thurman, right? It's gonna probably be in Dallas. If it happens, it'll probably be in Dallas too.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this. I said this the first time, right? When they started to negotiate and people started to get serious about it.
Yeah.
People got excited hearing the news.
Yeah.
Realistically, if the fight's going to be made, then Bud Crawford is going to have to most likely accept the short end of a guarantee, and he will most likely have to go to Dallas for a fight.
Yeah, you said that. Yeah, you said that.
Now, that's if you're Bud Crawford and you truly are confident that you can beat Errol Spence, or you can make this fight close enough, highly contested, that the fans will demand that
for you guys
to fight each other where it makes sense economically.
For you to do it again,
then you take it.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think there's one fighter. Think about the fight that made Floyd Mayweather Money Mayweather. That was
Oscar.
Him versus Oscar
De
La Hoya.
I agree with you, bro.
And
like,
what was the split? 70-30.
That's what I'm saying.
70 for Oscar, 30 for De La Hoya, 30 for Mayweather.
I just think
so. Sometimes you got to take that short back in order to Oscar, gain a little bit of power.
Look, to me, there should be no egos. If you are the draw, right?
And it's easy, and I'll say, it's and I'll put say, this. It's easy to say that for me because I'm not the one who's going to put his body through the grueles and the rigors of training.
Training camp, yeah, exactly.
And a fight.
I will say this, like I said, Manny was big, bro, with Floyd. They were both like having crucial draws, right? Both of them, crucial draws. Manny took lower than Floyd, though. Yeah. and Manny could take lower than Floyd. Without being fit, that's I always gauge it. Like, if Manny can do it, if Manny Pacquiao could do it at that particular time, the draw that Manny Pacquiao was, if he could take lower than Floyd, like, and not say, hey, I want 50-50 and just stand on 50-50 and say, I'll just take lower, then anybody can do it.
Well, like I said, I don't want to get into speculation.
Yeah, no,
All I can go off of is what I've
heard. Yeah, I agree.
You know,
but there is.
But Bud Crawford said that there were issues with regards to outside of the split, just certain.
I think he was willing to take lower in percentage, like the percentage. I think it was the guarantee, though. I was guaranteed. It was a guarantee stuff. I could be wrong, though.
There was a Facebook or Instagram
live? No, it was on Twitter. He went IG live.
Yeah, okay.
He explained,
he said that, this is his words, and I'm paraphrasing, that he was willing to not receive a guarantee if he had access to the books to sign off on certain promotional spends.
That's what it was, that's
right?
What
he wanted full transparency of the books going up to the fight and the expenses, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the he stated he would be willing to take less of a guarantee if he knew that as himself as a promoter, he would be able to see the books and have access to signing off on certain expenditures.
And that's what he was talking to Earl, was like, you got to be your own boss.
Yes.
Like, I got you to be your boss. You ain't in these rooms like I am now. So, I mean, it's interesting, man. It's interesting. But I want that fight to happen, man. We all wanted it to happen.
I think we all wanted it to happen. But I'm just going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't think that.
No,
I don't think it won't. I don't think for the money that these two fighters want to earn, their personalities will draw the general public.
They won't.
At this point.
This is my thing. I feel like, I agree with you. I know what you're saying. But this is my thing. If they don't make this happen, and that's just my opinion, this is my truth. If they don't make this happen, they wait too long, they're going to mess up the opportunity to being the draw they want to be. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it has
to happen. Because, like, to your point, I agree with you. To your point, I don't know, to personality-wise, and I know Bud for a fact. Like, I know Bud. Like, personality-wise, you can keep fighting. I don't think you're going to be as big as you want to be. Because you, like, as big as you think you are. But if you fight now, and you get this, whoever wins gets this feather in the hat, now I think you can be that dude. Like we talked about Tank. Like, Tank just... He has that personality.
He has
that knockout power that makes everybody, the way he knocks you out, it's something about it, right?
It's like we haven't seen that since Mike Tyson.
Exactly, right?
The video game knockouts.
The video game knockouts. So, but when you look at Earl And Bud, like, all right, Earl crowds a venue, but it's kind of there. His pub, Al Haymon's smart. Texas, we're going. Everything's big in Texas, so you're going to sell out the Dallas Cowboys stadium. So that helps you with your buzz or whatever. So you can definitely translate that if you go fight in the Barclays, because now that there's that thing. But can you consistently sell out venues if you're fighting somebody like a for instance, who did Bud fight? Like the dude Bud fought in Nebraska.
I forgot.
But an example, if you fought that dude in Vegas, you're not selling that out.
No.
You know what I'm saying? No. Like you're not doing anything with that. So you're not that type of draw. Now if Tank could fight that same dude in Barclays, I bet you Tank could sell that thing out.
Yeah, because it's the fights, it's his style.
Yes.
The knockouts.
So to your point, Will, which I totally agree, it's like they're gonna have to take care of, I feel like they have to fight now for them to reach that level.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, they need each other.
They do, man.
They need each other, and ultimately, whoever wins would probably be a bigger name in general and pop culture.
Yeah,
right.
And could you imagine? And not to cut you off, but could you imagine, like, if it becomes like this, Hagler or like Sugar Ray Hearns type of, or Sugar Ray Hagler, like if it's that type of thing. Where it's competitive, like Riddick Bowe Holyfield, like that competitive, that automatically puts both now. It takes both of them to that level.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think that's the type of fight this would.
Yeah.
I mean, I know who I think would win. I think Bud would win. Okay. But
I think Earl would win, but it's cool though. But I think it's competitive.
Yeah, I think Bud would win, but I think that the performance of both, because neither one of them are very flawed fighters.
Yes, yeah.
And if they come in willing to engage and willing to have an active fight,
yes,
then it can enhance both of their profiles.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like because you're right. I think the personality wise, I don't think
their personalities aren't going to sell the fight.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? But together, if they can have that type of trilogy, then yeah, like shoot, Wilder Fury helped out both to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, to a certain extent, helped out both. You know what I mean? So I'm like, come on, get it done. All right, man. As part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with University of Maryland Eastern Shore men's basketball coach, Jason Crafton. The school that I went to.
Your alma mater.
Yes. And we're doing well. We're doing pretty darn okay in the sport of college basketball. We beat Howard.
That's what's up, man.
And we beat Temple.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Quality wins.
Quality wins, man. Quality wins. They lost to Norfolk State. They're like, they're the big dogs. They lost at Norfolk. So, but they're right now, they're 8-8 overall, 1-1 in the MEAC. So watch out, man. Hawk pride. Catch it. Anyway, you'll have the interview after the break. Listen to Urban Sports, man.
For ages.
Get it.
Deuces on Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
.com.
Got young one, chopping that thing, baby. Swiss beats, full surface. Come on. Come on. Come on.
When I'm drunk in the club, I might just toss it. Block party in the hood, I might just toss it. Underground, downtown, I might just toss it. Give me the keys to the city, I'ma lock it. They ain't gon' take me alive, and you can bet that. Hit 'em where the chest at, hit 'em where the neck at. Show me where the wrist at. They in the same building, living like a mess pack. 4 miles from where the deck at. Bet that, shout it. You and me gon' ride over to the other side. Sign these motherfuckers die. First make a prank call and get the kids out the house. Ain't tryna kill no kids, but I'ma turn it lights out.
Money, then I'm kicking her out. I spit game to your wife, then we robbing your house. Not good that way that we're gripping the screen. If you got it and I want it, I ain't calling your name. Just lay it down, boy, like I'm balling. See, you get your chest.
crashing in a white G-Wagon with my arm out the window, gripping a dog. Get it right, I got Houston on lock. I kid it right, I switch the lights every time I buy a drop, homie. You got Swiss on the beat, I gotta come with the heat. It's David Banner, young one in F-L-I-B.
Get it cooking this thing, now set it off in the stain. We sippin' and leanin' by the bar, they know we drunk in this thing. Get it cooking this thing, now set it off in the stain. We sippin' and leanin' by the bar, they know we drunk in this thing.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole and Ray, and we are part of Amppire Media at amppiremedia.com. It's time for HBCU Corner. This individual is no stranger to the show. We have University of Maryland Eastern Shore men's basketball coach Jason Crafton. What's up, Coach Crafton, and welcome back to the Urban Sports Scene.
Fellas, what's going on? Good to be here. Appreciate you guys having me. Appreciate the support. You know, for UMES and the HBCU culture, man, let's have some fun, man. Let's get after it.
I mean, you know, we're HBCU. We're Maryland. We're Eastern Shore alumni, so this is awesome for us, man. We're all about Hawk pride. That's what we're about.
Nice,
Hawk pride.
Nice.
This visit is going to be just straight friendly. Last time we were debating, you were trying to say Michael Jordan was from New York, and whatever. I'm not going there today. This is going to be fun because UMES is doing big things, and you are highly responsible for that. So. Thanks for joining us, bro.
No, I appreciate it. It's all about the players. The players make the coach look good. So, you know, they bought in and we've got good people. And when you try to change a culture, not only you got to bring in, you know, talent and get that talent better, but you got to bring in good people. And we got really good people. And those, that's what's giving us a chance right now to do some cool things.
So, Ray and I, we missed homecoming this year, but how was homecoming?
You know, I think homecoming was cool, not just because we got a win. But it's been really exciting to see just more Maryland Eastern Shore alums get excited about basketball. And it's also been cool to see basketball alums get excited about coming back and feeling like they can come back. It's been such a disconnect with the basketball alumni community because there's been so many coaching changes, you know, and people just haven't been excited about the brand of basketball and the culture of the program. So you guys told me that when I first got here. So it's just what it was. And you know, we've just tried to change that narrative and try to, you know, put together a team of guys that are blue collar, hungry. And it was cool to be at homecoming and just see so many people starting to come back. I mean, we had about a dozen basketball alums just in our locker room talking to our guys after the game. And,
I saw that.
That was cool. It happened organically. They wanted to come back. And it was really cool for them to feel so much pride in telling their stories. And I take that very seriously because that's one of the things I talked about when I took the job was trying to connect, you know, former alums and making them feel like they could come home again.
Well, Coach, you're doing that. You're definitely changing the culture and you're building this program. And it's showing because currently you're on a 4-game winning streak, including a big win against Temple University, moving your overall record this season to 7-7. What has been the key to this winning streak?
You know, the guys, you know, the players buying in, players playing hard, you know, we're top 10 in the country in steals per game. And, you know, that's a number that we've held, you know, in high regard for our program. We were third last year in the nation. So, you know, I think that, you know, we've just continued to become more scrappy on the defensive end and which has been our identity. But at the same time, we've also improved our offensive execution and we've been able to, you know, make some shots, and we've got multiple guys that you have to defend out to the 3-point line that are shooting over 35% from three, and that helps. So I think those things, you know, coming together, and then we've got some veteran leadership guys that have been here with me since day one, and or have stuck it out with this program through getting a canceled season. We were just here doing nothing, having Zoom scouting reports, you know, not even able to practice and everything. So being picked dead last in the country from Sports Illustrated 2 years ago and coming out and winning 11 games last year and, you know, having a chip on our shoulder still to come out and prove some more, you know, that's what's been a testament to. You know, I'm not here to take the credit. It's the people. You want to change the culture, you got to bring in the right people. And I feel like we got really good people here within our basketball program trying to do some great things, and we're excited about what they're doing.
So, Coach, you mentioned the players. So who are some of these key players that help, you know, get you on the streak? Who have stepped up, you know, like during the streak?
Yeah. Well, it's so many guys. And I think that when you look at it, you know, you hear our culture being one way and being about family and togetherness and playing with tenacity, which is our edge. You know, I always feel like for us to be successful, you got to have multiple guys that are kind of in that 8 to 13 point range. It's never just one guy for us. So And we've got a bunch of guys doing that. Zion Styles right now is, you know, who used to lead us in scoring is like right there at 11, 12 a game. He's like second on the team in scoring. He comes off the bench, you know, and does a great job and has been humble about it. He's been playing great basketball coming off the bench and not getting as much foul trouble. And that's really helped our team having him come off the bench. And he's embraced it, you know, and that's not everybody won't do that all the time, you know, and he's really bought into that. So he's an electrifying player. He's the guy you see on social media getting steals and dunking balls in transition, you know, and Sean Phillip is a guy that, you know, is right around that 10, 11, 12 point a game mark. And he also gets assists for us and gets steals and rebounds. He's kind of a utility guy, plays multiple positions. Amadou Fofana, you know, leads our team in assists, you know, and gets about 7-8 points a game. And, you know, is a great on the ball defender and does a great job of leading our basketball team. Kevon Boyles has come back from injury and he's getting around 12 points a game and he can play inside, outside. He's shooting the three well. And then Nate Pollard's our double-double guy that got defensive player of the week last week. And, you know, if he hasn't been getting double-doubles, he's always like right there at like 10, 11 rebounds, 8 or 9 points. So, you know, those are just a few guys, but we've had guys come off the bench and have done great things. Glenn Anderson's been huge for us. You know, Troy Hupstead has been big for us. And Cohen Thompson has done great things, whether we start him or bring him off the bench. Tuukka Nugent's been unbelievable. I mean, I can go down the line, just name everybody. This has been an entire team effort. It's not just one guy. And even the guys that don't play a lot, the energy they bring on the bench supporting the other guys is incredible. It's something like you're not used to seeing. So, that's why I say it's a special group of guys. They're good people and they support each other.
How, like, did it take you was it challenging to get everybody divided into the whole, the team mentality more like this one dude ain't going to be showcased. It's going to be a team effort, collective effort for this type of success. Did you have to do any kind of convincing or it was what it was?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. I mean, for obviously as coaches, we put out the rhetoric of what the theme is going to be and our one way theme, you know, I think is something that resonates with our guys. But also just being very intentional in the recruiting process, you know what I mean? And recruiting the right types of kids. And we've got a lot of guys that know each other and play together in AAU or, you know, half the roster's from New York and the other half of the roster's from the DMV. So you know, and then we got one guy from Memphis, Tennessee and Cohen Thompson, and he fits right into our, you know, our culture. So we've got a roster of guys that have not just been here together for multiple years, but they've also spent time before Maryland Eastern Shore. So there's something special about that camaraderie and relationships. They can go after each other, but there's a bond there. So it's a combination. It's a combination of what we're trying to instill, them buying in, bringing the right types of people, holding them accountable, and them holding themselves accountable. And that's what I've seen the most growth is these guys come out and they will hold themselves accountable before I have to say anything. And that's a sign of a mature team, and I think we have that.
Coach, without giving away too many secrets, I tweeted during the Virginia game, these UMES dudes, that they play defense. You retweeted it. And I just want to know, is that something that you work on constantly in practices? I mean, I played for one coach where we didn't touch the ball sometimes. We just worked on presses. We worked on defense constantly. So, because I felt like y'all had a chance. If you were able to knock down some, and you had some good looks, open shots in that first half, it would have been tight at halftime. It really would have. And it wasn't a blowout at halftime, but still, it was a double-digit lead. But just in general, you talked about being a scrappy defensive team. How do you get to that point?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And our first 5 minutes of that Virginia game, we executed some really good offense, got wide open shots, didn't make them, and then kind of scrapped it up and kind of got back in the game a little bit. And Virginia's Virginia. They're really good. And you can't miss your first 4 or 5 shots and get down. Yeah, it's just, you know, so – but you know, in terms of the day-to-day, I mean, every single day we do some type of aggressive defensive breakdowns, whether it's live or – you know, it's stationary type stuff, or it's always something. And every day we're finding ways to work on our rebounding, our ball screen defense, and our one-on-one defense and our help side in different ways. So it's every single day. If you came and watched us practice, it'd probably be like, man, it could probably get a little old sometimes, some of the basic stuff that we do. But our guys have really bought into it because they see the repetition and the results they get from doing this slide drill, like, 4 times a week or this closeout drill. You know, it's not like we're out here doing all these high tech. It's a lot of basic drills that we just do day after day to just get that muscle memory, get the baseline and techniques of how we want to defend things. And then on top of the technique, it's the edge. You know, when you got guys from Harlem and Brooklyn and the Bronx and Baltimore and, you know, and tough areas, you know, some of that edge comes out with the technique. And now you've got technique and edge, and that's a pretty tough thing to go against. So we combine that technique and that edge and that tenacity, and you know, that comes from what we instill in them, but also who they are by nature, what they've seen in their lives, growing up in the places they're from. And that's kind of what we look like when we're on the floor. If we look like a blue collar, scrappy, you know, cage fighting match like West 4th Street, then like we played at Columbia, everything was so crazy with the game day. We had a locker room with no board in it, and I'm writing on the mirror in the bathroom.
Wow.
And we had to run up the bleachers, and it was like just a crazy setup for us. And I said, listen, let's just get off the bus. Well, let's just make it like we're getting off the train stop, and let's just go out there and play basketball and take it to them. You know, and I got those same guys, you know, so you can say that, but you can't always do that. You know, like my guys have gotten off the train stop and going out and played, you know, in Rucker or at West 4th at the Cage or Dykeman or whatever the case may be, or in Baltimore or in DC somewhere. So they understand that rhetoric. They've been through that grind, and we're happy to have them here because it shows in how we do things.
So coach, also, like I mentioned earlier, you know, about the winning Temple, like, you know, for alums who went to Eastern Shore, like that game was it. Like a lot of people were chatting about it. Like, oh yeah, we here. Like we got that. We here now. Like that's all I saw on social media, people I talked to. Like, we here now. This was the win. I know in my experience, I mean, when I went to the Shore, we didn't have a win like that. Like yeah, that win, yeah. Like Ray, we ran out. Ray, we didn't not like that.
Yeah, well, social media wasn't a thing when we were in school.
Yeah, that's but it wasn't. It wasn't. But we
coach crafting. Yeah. So when they did have big wins, what nobody talked about. We would have to Google it, and our dial up would be slow. But it is the biggest win since we've been around. Since, no doubt.
Yeah, real talk.
I think that there's definitely something to be said. Not to take anything away from any other coach that's been here during the Division I era. You know, because there were some big wins this, and you know, St. Bonaventure. You know, I remember Maryland Eastern Shore beating those guys, I think in like 2013-14 or something like that. You know, Temple's a household name. You know, yes. And that was a huge win. So, you know, not to get into the debate of if it's the biggest win ever in Division I history, is definitely one of the biggest wins in recent Division I history. And I think that's what people are probably excited about. There's no way around it. It's a big win for our program, and our guys were excited about it. They dumped me with the cooler, you know, and we had some, you know, the water. it was definitely a step past beating Fordham last year, which was a big win for us, you know, beating Temple at Temple, and the way we did it, you know, being up 14, 15 points and kind of controlling the game and kind of just, you know, in many ways out-toughing them. You know, it was a huge win, not just for the team we played, but for how we did it. So, but what we told our guys was, okay, we don't want to be the team that beats Temple and then goes and loses to Columbia, you know? So, you know, like it's great for the day. It's great for the moment, but now you got to get to the next thing. And it was exciting to see our guys come out ready to play against Columbia, go up big. And then when Columbia came back, find a way to dominate the game in overtime and get the win. So I really like the way we closed out the non-conference season, but again, we enjoyed it that night. We came in the next day and said, okay, that's now done. Either way, whether we won those games or not, whether I'm on Urban Sports Scene talking about beating Temple and Columbia and beating whoever we beat in the non-conference and having the best non-conference record in 30 years or whatever it is, either way, we're still going to be getting ready to go to Norfolk to start a new season.
Let's go.
So it's good to have that behind us, but it really doesn't mean anything right now because everybody's 0-0.
Like, oh, Ray, you wanted to take the next question, Ray?
I did. So, Coach, I mean, I just want to reiterate the fact that even before, I'll say this, before the Temple win, George Mason also shouted out the work you were doing. Like, I saw that that press conference. So I think people are taking notice regardless, and I think your team is taking on your identity, just watching you on the sideline. But I cover,
I'm crazy, right?
Yeah, but I love it, though, man. I mean, yeah. We also cover NFL football. We watch a coach with his arms crossed, and it drives me nuts. I can't take it. So anyway, I'm not gonna mention that right now. But when I cover Howard, I'm here in the DMV, and when I got to Howard before, I think whatever game they had, it doesn't matter what game it was, but somebody said big win for your alumni. The first thing they said to me, I stepped in the gym, and then Coach Blakeney mentioned it in his presser after their recent game, and another coach from LaSalle also said the MEAC is actually coming up. Because, you know, we just saw what Maryland Eastern Shore did. So it's just a big deal. But how is that going to impact, you think, recruiting and just moving your program forward this after this season?
Yeah, I like, again, I think it gives us some. Conference. Now we have to take that. It's only as good as what we're now able to do in the conference season. So, you know, we need to go out here in the conference and solidify what we did in the non-conference and say, hey, we're going to be a program that's going to be, you know, right here. Listen, we came out here in the summertime and said that we wanted to win the MEAC. We wanted to not just get to the NCAA tournament. We wanted to win games. You know, like that's when I came in after the day after the conference, the Columbia game, and the non-conference was over. I said, what did we say in the summer? We said we wanted to win the MEAC. We wanted to get to the NCAA tournament and not just be there like, hey, we're the happy HBCU that got to their first ever NCAA tournament. No, we wanted to get there. And we wanted to win games. And so we started having those types of conversations and saying like, so if this is we said those things. So now we just can't ever get too high. We can never get too low. So I think when the smoke clears, we'll be able to probably receive it. Like, wow, that Temple win, like we enjoyed it. But like we've gotten so far past it now because we know we got Norfolk State coming up. And Norfolk State is a really good basketball team that's won games at, like Temple, you know, as a habitual thing in terms of what they do. So we're going, you know, like that, you know, as much as it's big for Maryland Eastern Shore, we're going to be going against the juggernauts of the league, and we got to get over that high because that high is not going to get us to winning the basketball game on Saturday. What's going to get us to having a chance to beat a team like that is staying locked in and staying focused. So. Yeah, man, it's great. It's great for the brand. It's great for everything. But we want to come into conference play here, and we want to really set the stage and, you know, go after a team like Norfolk and put ourselves in position to win the game and go after Howard. And we got a great opening weekend here playing against two of the top considered programs. We would pick preseason six. So we get a chance right now to really show what we can do. And we're going to be able to get to mid next week and have a good idea of where we are.
Absolutely.
See, Coach, you know, you know segues, man. You know segues. You know, we went right into it. Like, you know, again, look, Norfolk. Saturday, it's going down, man. You're driving out there. You guys are going out there.
That's going to be a fist fight,
MEAC man. Champs, man. They're back-to-back MEAC champs. Do you categorize this game as a huge game? So a lot of people would say it's too early, but do you categorize this game as a huge game?
I think, hey, if you know me and you see how I coach, I just coached against the Division III team we played the other night against St. Mary's, the same way I coached against Temple. You know, they're all huge to me. It's not like we're some established program where it's like everything just runs itself. My intensity level has to be at a consistent pace, place every single night, every single practice, you know, for us to be able to get some consistency here in everything we do. My players, we all on the same page on this thing. So the way I coach, we always want to feel us, feel my players, feel my bench, feel my coaching staff, feel me. You know, we want to bring that type of energy everywhere we go. So is it a big game? They're all big games.
Yeah.
You know, I think for the fans, you know, when you look at the MEAC standings, you see they're one and we're two right now. You know, I think it brings a little bit more excitement to it from a fan perspective. But you know, make no mistake about it. It's two of the best defensive teams in the league. And we're both scrappy. We're both young, intense coaches. We're both from New York. We both know each other. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a scrappy one. And I know they're respect what we're doing in terms of building this program. We got a ton of respect for what they've done as a program. And the only way to become anything as a program is to take down the top dog. So that's the mission right now, is to go down there and not just, you know, have a great time, but to put ourselves in a position to try to win the basketball game. So that's what our mentality is going in, and it shouldn't be any different you know, for anybody that's going to go down there. So that's what we're going to try to do.
When you play the top dog, or when you go up against the bully, you gotta hit him in the mouth early. And I know you two defensive teams, but I'm hoping that in that road environment that you'll be able to get ahead maybe in the early going, because I think that sometimes that impacts an experienced group like Norfolk. I mean, that's to me the key to them is they return the entire team from last year.
Yeah,
and I know we had one coach say, well, they might be complacent. I'm like, nah, man, I think that's a big deal when you talk about just how teams are cohesive. But I think that you have the same thing, and that's what you can fight kind of force for force with them.
We're similar in terms of the rhetoric of, yes, when you look at the returning guys, you know, the difference is their experience returning is winning experience, you know, winning in the MEAC, winning in postseason, and our experience is building experience, you know. So, you know, and you know, those guys, you know, like that, like they're talented and they're on the same accord. Watching film already, like I said, they play both ends of the floor. Coach Jones does a great job. It's going to be a chess match. Every time we play each other, there's always glimpses of some really tight segments. They've always pulled away and won the game, but there's always been segments in the game where you kind of see like it's been a real chess match, and we've, you know, found ways to be very competitive against them. We've never beaten them yet, and our guys know that. So, you know, I expect it to be a old school class, a MEAC classic, and, you know, let's go down there and let's give it our best shot against the league's best. Everybody knows they're the best. And I got a lot of respect for them because they got to take everybody's best shot all the time. You know, so everybody's going to Norfolk trying to take down the champs. So that's a credit to what to Rob Jones' ability to coach, those guys' ability to continue to win games, and what they built as a basketball program down there. Nothing but respect for those guys.
Well, Coach, you know, I'm wishing you the best. I wish you all the best of luck. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm biased. Let's keep it a buck. I'm biased. You know,
that's what I like about this. I can be a fan in these interviews with Coach Batchelor and you, of course. I can be a fan, and I can just represent like I want to, you know. we love our MEAC coaches, though. I'm not here to sugarcoat it, but at the same time, they already know where home is for us. And I told Coach Batchelor that this past year, this is a milestone for my wife, but I will be there homecoming this coming school year, next year.
So that's what's up.
I'll be back, bro.
Here's what's cool. And when you talked about the Temple thing, and, you know, I'm so sometimes locked in and, you know, trying to just stay on track and not get too high, not get too low. But I'm at the gym the other night, Pure Fitness, and, you know, I go there all the time, and no one ever knows who I am. and I don't have Marilyn Easton Shore gear on, and I just go in and, you know, I get my workout in. And I was in there the other night, and I had people stopping me being like, oh, you're the basketball coach at Eastern Shore. We saw you guys beat Temple, and oh, we saw you guys beat Columbia, and I was getting stopped, and I was like, that was pretty cool to see that there was a little bit of buzz going on in this small community that's never happened before. Because I walk in there, and no one ever knows who I am all the time. And I love that, because I can just go and work. And for 25 minutes, I got my workout was stopped, and I was sitting there talking about Manly Shore basketball. And I just said, hey, you know what, for a small town like this, to start seeing them get excited about, you know, what our guys are doing on the basketball floor, you know, hopefully that leads to us putting some more people in the stands and being able to take advantage of having a great home court environment.
Definitely. And Coach, to add on to that, it's not just the winning Temple. Like, yeah, it's the 4-game winning streak, but also it's like what you just mentioned, what you just said, like the home environment. You're 5-0 at home. Like, there is much to be positive about this team and with the direction of this team. You know what I mean? Like, I went to, you know, even when we were at the Shore, we were at games, teams would beat us at home. Like, it wasn't a home court advantage at times. Like, now you're building that. So, to me, it's a lot. It's a lot to be positive about the program, to be honest with you. A lot.
Appreciate you,
man. Hopefully we can come back, you know, like I said, we had beaten Marist and Lehigh at home and then, you know, and taking care of business against the 9-1s. I mean, my first year, we couldn't beat a Division III team. And Maryland Eastern had lost, you know, in prior years, back-to-back to Salisbury University. So, you know, we've come a long way. We want to keep building this thing. Let's try to get to the MEAC bye week and maybe do a check-in or before the MEAC tournament. And let's be out there ready to go to that MEAC tournament, you know, in a position for Maryland Eastern Shore
to go out there and win that thing. I should be at the MEAC tournament, too. We're going to catch you in person soon, bro.
Yeah, we are.
Sounds good.
Well, hey, Coach, thanks for being on HBCU Corner. Is there anything you would like to add?
Hey, I appreciate you guys, man. You know, just love the HBCU movement and everything you guys do for the culture. Love talking hoops and you know, just come out and support Maryland Eastern Shore basketball, man. Just come out and see these guys. We got 8 seniors. They're playing tough blue-collar basketball. They also got a 3.2 GPA this fall. So we got, you know, winners on the floor, winners off the floor, winners in life, and that's what we're trying to build here.
All right, you heard it here, man. Hawk pride. We're out.
Catch it.
Appreciate it, man.